W6N, 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 calling G7W. How do you hear me? Over.
Welcome to the Josh Shakespeare Podcast. I'm Josh Shakespeare. Solo this run. Chris is doing things elsewhere at the moment. There will be other guests that I will have on the show. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to do this. It won't just be Chris. Sometimes it'll just be me. And then other times, obviously, there will be guests. We'll play games. We'll tell jokes. It'll be late night. It'll be fantastic. I understand none of you have reached out asking me where the Patreon that I proposed I was doing was. Thankfully, that's not going to happen right now until I build a substantial amount of fans that are willing to pay for bonus content and merch and tickets and discounts, etc., etc. What I will be doing, however, is streaming more often. In fact, it is the 14th, so for those of you listening right now, you can probably look forward to me streaming every single day, if not Monday to Friday, for the foreseeable future on TikTok exclusively, which I've read will return to the App Store very soon. So that's great. Be on the lookout for that. I have a substantial fan base on TikTok. Not too substantial, but just I've been advised by professionals that I have enough of a following on TikTok to where if I were to live stream there, it would be a net positive. It would benefit me greatly if I started doing that. So for starters, I didn't join the Mormon church, but I did go to church for the first time. That was fun. For the first time ever, I was baptized by my mother in a non-denominational church. I don't know where it was. I don't think she remembers. Maybe it was in Florida. I do know that I suspect that's why I may be slightly autistic. Because they say vaccines are what caused this. I don't know. Maybe God disapproves of you doing it in a non-denominational church, and that's why I'm a little bit iffy. People who have met me throughout my life have been like, you know, you're very weird. You're very strange. You have a hard time picking up on social cues. I've gotten that criticism before. Now my response is going to be, hey, you know, what can I say? I've been baptized. So I went to Mormon church. Here's how it happened. I received a little bit of backstory even before that. I went on Instagram and I saw an ad for the church. I did not know it was a Mormon church. I know absolutely nothing. I know nothing about religion, organized religion. I don't know any of the stories regarding Christianity and God and, you know, the sacrifice and the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. I know very little. I know some of the stories. I know just bits and pieces. But if we got down to the specifics of who these people were, what their function, what their job was, I would not be able to tell you. I just was, yeah. I'm sure I learned about it in public school, but I just was not paying attention because, to my own detriment, I was too focused on what other people thought of me. There's a lot of that going around right now. A lot of us haven't matured past that point in high school, but I am making an effort to learn about religion. I do, at this point in my life, think it is quite interesting. But I do believe, despite all that, despite not going to church, despite not having any type of organized religion, I do believe that I can hear God talking to me sometimes. You know, in pockets of silence. We all have those stories where we're down, super down on our luck. We feel hopeless. And then there's like a little voice that pops in your head. And it's very crystal clear and it makes everything make sense. It's very profound. It's very wise. That what I do believe I can hear God sometimes, and I'll talk to him. Maybe sometimes he'll talk back to me. And this is the most LA thing I'll probably, you'll hear people in LA say this a lot, where they'll be like, well, you know, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. There's that element of it too. I know what they mean when they say it, especially someone who's been to multiple coffee and juice shops and has lived in Los Angeles for the past 6 years. I know what they mean when they say that. They lack discipline. No. I know what they mean when they say that, and when I say that, it's about the same exact thing. So I asked God for guidance regarding finding love and fully being at peace with myself and how to do that. Because the things usually work out for the best in my life, despite how much turmoil I put myself through. So I asked, I was like, okay, is there any, I just need a sign. It'd be great if I saw a sign, which in hindsight, in a lot of ways, it does kind of, you do kind of set yourself up when you do that. When you do kind of set yourself up when you say things like that, because then you're looking for any type of confirmation for maybe negative things that you already believe about your life and yourself. But the next day after I asked for that sign, I saw an ad for church, and then I gave my information, my first and last name, my phone number. And then I think maybe the next day or the day after next, after that, right as I was about to take a nap in my car, I do this quite often because I am a hard worker. I go out and write and go to work, come back from work, and then write some more in my car, and then sometimes I take a nap. And I'm beginning to understand that may be just a symptom of getting older, is wanting to and needing to nap more. Now, right as I was about to take a nap, I get a phone call from these two sisters that are on a mission, named Sister Beloya and Sister Yarrow. And I also joined the church because I wanted to get pussy. Now, I was like, okay, they said a prayer for me. And I was like, okay, sure. And, you know, they do the scripture and they go, well, how do you feel about, how does God's love feel to you? And, I mean, I'm very good at descriptions. And when I get into therapy spaces, I said it felt like a warm blanket. And they go, wow, that's very powerful. I was like, thank you so much. So the first activity, it was, you know, it's a congregation, so there's group activities that they go out and do. It is really a community. It is really like a family. So I went to the first activity that they invited me to of the congregation was bowling. So I went bowling with Mormons. By the way, I still stand by that. I think that's a great name for a band or an album. Bowling with Mormons, like bowling for soup. I went bowling with some Mormons. It was fun. I had a lot of fun. Made some people laugh. I showed up. Showed my face and learned some interesting things about the church. I learned that the sisters, if missionaries are what you call them because they have name tags and they go by Sister X, Sister Blank. I found out that they cannot hug men. Like they cannot. Somewhere in the scripture that they can't, while they're on their mission, they are prohibited from hugging men. And she goes, quote, it's for our safety. So, I mean, yeah, sure. So I went, it was a lot of fun. I met some people, made some, you know, cool new friends. I was like, I didn't know that that's what this was. Church of the Latter-day Saints. I had no idea. And it's funny talking about this with other people that make it seem like, well, yeah, it's obvious. I'm like, it's not for everybody. I've lived a very sheltered life, and every day I am paying for it, every single day. It's not necessarily that I'm dumb, even though there are elements of that. It's more so just a lack of an experience or being wet behind the ears, and I think that shines through my face. There's some theory about that, about how you can study people's faces and you can kind of tell what you need to tell about them. The alt-right uses this for nefarious purposes, but it is, I think, a found science in a lot of ways. Now, I go there, I had fun, I left. when you go into these situations, it's important, especially as a young man, 26 years of age, 25 at the time, it's important not to go to certain events with the expectation of you finding someone, looking for a wife. Now, provided, yes, that is the place that you normally would go to, which is church, to find a wife. It is a very incestuous, polygamous, debaucherous social gathering in many, many ways. I mean, yeah. But I checked my emotions and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go out and objectively try to meet new people, try to learn about the church. This does feel as though God was sending me a message that I need to get closer to Him. Mormons believe that there was another Bible and that God or Jesus' work was not finished after the first one, which is interesting. That is, I think that's about it. That's where the Book of Mormon comes from, where they just like, I don't know, they I don't want to use the phrase they made up a bunch of extra stories, but that is what conflicting religions say about the Mormon Church, which is equally hilarious too. I've spoken to other people about this because I posted it on my story. I was like, oh, my first time ever going to church. And they were like, and then people who were Catholics, people who were Christians were like, are you Mormon? I was like, no, I just wanted to see what it was about. And they go, oh, okay, well, you know, you joined a cult, right? I go, yeah, hey, listen, bro, they're all cults. You understand? All of it is it's all a cult. But I love, there's nothing funnier than talking to people that can't see that they've also drank the Kool-Aid as well. They've drunk the fruit punch. It is interesting to me because I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm not being disrespectful to anyone's religion, but I'm like, the beauty in being sheltered and having this outside looking in perspective and being a novice in all of this is you don't understand that it's the same exact way from my perspective looking at all of you, which is funny to me. Like, it's a cult. I love when Catholics and Christians pretend that they don't have contempt for other religions or the Mormon Church. They go, no, well, it's the truth. This is the truth. This is the oldest book ever written. Yeah, sure. If that's what you believe, that's fine. And I'm not denigrating these people, but it's just funny when you, I just love when you just admit that you kind of don't like these people. Because I asked one of the Mormons, I was like, so why do they call you guys Mormons? And he got kind of like, he didn't get offended, but you can tell that he's had to deal with this conversation before, even no matter who it comes from. But he was like, well, that's what they call us. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, I think it's my turn to bowl now. But I went to church, it was fun. I heard everyone's testimony. I was not expecting that level of emotion. People got up on stage and then the waterworks just came. I was not expecting that. That was very interesting and it was a very powerful experience. It felt like therapy for a lot of these people. I understand why people get emotional when they do this. I understand why they come and I understand why they, you know, find a sense of community. It was interesting being the funniest person at church, by the way. That was an interesting experience. I don't know if that's a red flag or anything like that, but I went to Sunday because I went to church and then there was like a Sunday school right after. So it was like 12 to 1 and then 1 to 1:30. And I went there. They were talking about Lucy losing papers, stories which I identified with as far as making mistakes and then God being like, it's okay, I got it. Everything's going to be fine. I identified with that story. As more time goes on, I have to walk the line between understanding whether or not I am fooling myself or if this is divine, actionable intelligence. I am trying to figure that out. Am I doing this just because I'm trying to fill a void of a lack of sense of guidance? Or am I doing this simply just because like I want to kind of almost check out in a lot of ways? It's very difficult to not just check out. It's very difficult to not just be like, yeah, fuck it. That's it. And then we'll do that. Or before, in my case, which was Spirituality, which was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, which I've spoken about on a podcast that I've done with Andrew and Stevie that's coming out pretty quickly. And I understand this is very offensive to a lot of religious figures. We were like, well, no, I'm just going to do spirituality and, you know, meditate every day. And that apparently that pisses God off. I'm just saying that's what I did. That's what I'd done, and that's what resonates with me most. I've been trying to explain this to Catholics and Christians, and I mean, pretty much any other religion, for the most part, is spirituality, the practice of meditating, and understanding fundamentally that all you have is right here, right now, and your breath, and focusing on where your feet are, and that you virtually don't really have any problems right here, right now, in this moment. That and the practice of understanding that and applying it to every single day of your life and every aspect and all of your thoughts, that is far more digestible than it being just a guy. It's a guy. It's a guy that's kind of, you know, and his son that suffered for you. It feels more digestible. I'm not saying it's the correct religion. I've just expressed how you can maybe, is if it's possible to do both, can you maybe do both? Does God ever want me to, can I meditate? Does God want me to do a warrior too? I have a Christian friend that was like, no, these warrior poses are demonic and I can't do it. That's another, man, oh man, I'm telling you right now. That's the another conflict that I have as well, is because I suspected that my future wife or girlfriend was a religious woman, a God-fearing woman. That was another thing that motivated me to go to church. And it really does kind of go to they loved me over there. I was very charming. I was very funny. I definitely received a few more interested glances from a few of the women there than I would outside anywhere else. And I get it. People think I'm a Republican or a conservative, so that makes sense. I'm very well put together. I look like I've been in the military, or I've had former Marines ask me if I myself was a Marine. So it makes perfect sense why I would go there and then just kill it. It's like that show Lucifer, where he would just go anywhere, and women would just be almost divinely attracted to him. And he said, well, it's because I appeal to the dark and mischievous hearts in all of you. Perhaps I appeal to women's desire to be told what to do. But the issue is that it's a commitment. I know what kind of animal I am. It did feel very cult-like, because I went there, the last meeting I had with the Mormon Church was, you know, a few other people that I had known at the time that I had met, and they kind of, not necessarily that they cornered me, but it was like a meeting. I sat in a chair, they all sat down, they maybe read like a few scriptures, but they, you know, it definitely ended with, are you willing to get baptized in the name of Jesus Christ? And I go, oh boy, oh no. And then one of the guys there one of the members of the congregation, he said something to me. He didn't know that he shot himself in the foot when he said this to me. He didn't know that, because I understand like what consistency and putting in 1,000 hours. I understand that whole concept to a staggering degree. When you look at, you know, if you follow me on Instagram, you know, like how often I work out at 2 a.m., 1 a.m. at the gym, and, you know, how my body is a reflection of the dedication that I've put in. He didn't know that he shot himself in the foot when he said this to me. He said, you know, I look at my religion and I look at, you know, coming to church. I look at it like a muscle, you know, and I just look at, you know, being physically fit. And I go, oh boy, you really should not have said that to me. You really shouldn't have. Because now I know that this is something I gotta have to put more effort into, which I really don't want to do. I'm really just trying to. I mean, make friends and find a girl. This is too much of a. I already have my commitments. I have the gym. I have comedy. I have the podcast. I have acting. I have writing. I have meditation, and being present. I have. I mean, yeah, I think that's about it. I mean, you're making money, I have work. I have all these other things as well that I'm focusing on. And just adding that on, and I mean, I'm still kind of going back and forth on it, to be honest with you, but it just does not feel like it's the move that I want to make right now. So that was just kind of my, that was my process of all of it. The signs that I've seen so far have led me to this church. And just the fact that all he needed to say was, well, I look at it like a muscle. I go, oh boy, don't do that. Please don't do that. Because I understand, like, what I'm going to have to go, you have to come every, I'm going to have to come back every Sunday until I'm like the best guy that goes to church, which you do not want. Trust me. That's going to interfere with everything else that I have going on. I did make the time to do it, and it was fun. It was warm. It was welcoming. Everyone, another thing I've learned from this experience is that everyone has a fucking opinion about this too. That's another thing. You tell people that you go to that you went to a Mormon church, and everyone has like an opinion. My brother, who I was on a trip with in Vegas for my birthday weekend, he made it about race. He was like, Mormons believe that blacks are, you know, beetles or whatever the fuck. It was some kind of deep-rooted racism that I had no idea about. He was like, yeah, I think like one of the stories was like God burned a guy and that's why he came out black. I was like, really? He electrocutes black. He electrocutes white people and they all of a sudden have giant dicks. Is that the theory? Walk me through this, Colin. Let's figure this out together. He burnt that and he goes, well, yeah, you know, white people in the Mormon church view themselves above black people. You don't get how, very disrespectful, by the way. You don't get how race works. And I just had to like kind of go into my CIA questioning. I had to be like, oh, really? What makes you think that? What makes you think that I can't feel? And I was like, okay. It was one of those situations where I kind of had to be like, all right, cool. If that's what you think it is, I don't understand how it's necessary. And let's use your argument. Let's say that God did burn a guy, and then that's how black people were created. Imagine getting electrocuted and then now suddenly you can run faster than most races. Oh God, that's such a punishment. Yeah, enough. So anyway, that was my experience. I did have to take a few steps back from going to the Mormon church because I needed time to process all of this to see if it was something I really, really, really wanted to do. And I don't know. A lot of this is my indecisiveness. I mean, I've decided not to go to... I've decided to put more into the church of stand-up comedy, which is the most... I don't want to shit on it. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. That's where I'm at, is figuring out whether or not if church is something I want to make another huge part of my life. And that is, I think, a shift that has happened since I've turned 26 on February 4th. Is it really, because you go on social media and here's what they'll say. They'll be like, you know, there'll be like a shift and you'll just start thinking differently. And I truly believe that. So something just kind of, something like just clicks in your head. And you no longer, I don't know, it's like shifting the frequency on your brain waves. It's a very interesting phenomenon. It's an interesting feeling. There's like a certain level of almost blissful acceptance for who you are, what you do, and your experiences. You look back on your life and you're like, wow, I've done a lot, haven't I? So that was just my experience. It may come up a little bit later. It is a commitment. I've committed myself to spirituality so much so to the fact that I'm like, here are the two main things that I want that I don't feel as though I need. These are the two things that I want that I don't feel going to church will be as fulfilling as if I went somewhere else to find it. So that's just where I'm at. We'll be right back with how to not get psyoped. That was the personal aspect of this. We'll see you in a second.
Do you slide on all your nights like this?
Welcome back. Here's how to avoid being psyoped. This is an article that comes from Substack. I saw a video by former intelligence interrogator, military operator. He's worked close with these agencies. His name is Chase Hughes. I saw a video that he put out on how to not get psyoped. Now, psyoped means psychological operation. And once you understand, or in my case, once you ask the right questions and you're willing to be wrong and you don't go into it with certain expectations and you can check your emotions and your confirmation bias at the door, you can avoid most manipulations, most emotionally charged attacks, most deceit from mass media and even on Instagram. This should be very alarming to a lot of you, but there are intelligence operatives, former and current, that don't even allow their children to have phones. They don't allow their children to have iPhones. They don't allow them to watch TV. That should tell you a lot. One of the most highly trained people in our government does not allow them to use things that are very available for everyone, that everyone has. So we're just going to go over a few of these. I'm just going to go over a few. This is how I've avoided the COVID hysteria. This is how I managed to, whenever someone that is black gets shot and it's filmed and it goes viral all over social media, I check my emotions. I ask questions whenever someone gets assassinated. What I do now, actually, is whenever something like major happens, I wait a few days. Number one, because I'm so busy with whatever's going on in my own personal life, and just me having my own anxiety about where I'm at in my career and comparing myself to other people and all that. I'm so enamored with all of that that it's very easy for me to not pay attention to major events, especially when it's obvious that they're trying to get you to feel a certain way or think a certain thing about a group of people or a person. That's where I'm at. So, that's also another trick. That's my own trick, aside from the article that we haven't gone into yet. Just make yourself so busy and so almost self-obsessed that they can shoot two more CEOs in the back of the head and you'd be like, oh, right, yeah, what happened there? It's obvious they want you to cheer this guy on. They want you to think he's hot. He is handsome. But it's obvious that there's like a lack of empathy going on that in a lot of ways is understandable. A lot of it is reasonable. A lot of it is grounded in reality. I just got off the phone with my insurance that gave me the runaround. And with my Medicare insurance, they just gave me the runaround. I was like, oh yeah, I totally get it. I absolutely 100% understand. I was trying to make an appointment to a doctor and I had to explain the symptoms of what I was currently going through. And then the woman over the phone was like, okay, well, we can't give you advice over the phone. I'm like, why did I? Because I'm like, I was told that they can give me advice from a nurse over the phone, which is why I even reached out to this person in the first place. And I didn't go through my insurance, but I went through a specific hospital of doctors that were in my network. And I was like, yeah, so this is what I'm experiencing, a little bit of shaky vision. Should I be, ear issue? Like my left ear kind of hurts a little bit. Should I worry about that? And then she just goes, yeah, well, we can't give you advice. I go, why the fuck did you have me tell you what was wrong with me if you cannot give me advice? Where is a Glock? Where is a 3D printed Glock with a suppressor when you need one? Okay, so number one. The fate model. Focus, authority, tribe, emotion. Fate. It drives decisions. So focus. Okay, they use repetition, shocking visuals, or fear-inducing scenarios to dominate attention. So this would be, let's say, for example, the George Floyd incident. There was nowhere you could go without seeing that cop with his knee on George's neck. They showed that same image everywhere, and it was 8 minutes. But it was just like a few sets of images that almost became the emblem of that entire movement. The just repetitive repetitive images that just you just keep seeing it over and over and over again. Also with COVID, you kept seeing some people wearing masks, people in the hospital. You saw the caskets. You saw people. You saw the trash bags apparently with bodies in it. I saw nurses dancing. That's what I saw. Why is this message aggressive? That's a tip. Compare airtime and disproportionate focus. Authority. Trusted figures may unnaturally align with narratives. Yes. Let's start out soft, and then maybe let's go a little bit heavier. So soft would be celebrities. It would be ad campaigns, movies, TV shows that all have the same episode that is directed to have like a specific message, you know? Sometimes it's not always nefarious. Sometimes it's like, take care of your health, go to the dentist, go to the doctor, etc. And then you'll have celebrities coming out that will consume airtime to specifically tell you to, let's maybe say, get vaccinated or wear a mask or socially distance exactly 5 feet, even though that was not backed up by science. They low-key pulled it out of their ass. So, and then let's go a little bit heavier since we did that. Let's springboard into Dr. Anthony Fauci. I like to put, when they call him doctor, I like to put it in quotation marks. But it's kind of like, it's almost like sarcastic at this point. But he was the point of authority that they used. And then, you know, we leaked the emails from the Twitter files, and then we, et cetera, et cetera. He was the point of authority that a lot of people used for medical information. And then you also saw this on the right as well. Where they, who's the guy that, he looks like John DiMaggio, that they were like, he did not have anything to do with the NRA thing. Who was his name? I don't know. Let me pull up his name. Joe something. M-R-N-A. Joe, it wasn't Joe Rogan, obviously. He is definitely, let's say, a point of authority. Robert Malone. Yeah. So you saw examples of this everywhere. That's what they do. They use a point of authority to get you to think something that's absolutely incorrect. Like high-ranking members in the government that lie to you all the time. So just question authority figures and speaking out of scope. That would be an example. That's a tip. That's a tip on how to avoid being psyoped in that regard. Now, emotion. Messages triggering fear, hope, or outrage, bypass critical thinking. This is another example that you saw during the pandemic where you just were seen as a bat. They literally called you a grandma killer if your mask was a few inches beneath your nose, if you were standing a little too close to people, if you said that Muslims were not all bad people right after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, just those examples just in general. That would be an example of emotion used to get you to do certain things. Well, you're a good person, right? You're not a bad person. You're not a dingbat. You're not a pig. You're not carrying an infectious virus, right? Let us put this swab in your anus. So that would be an emotional trigger. They loved using your I love how they didn't give a fuck about your grandfather, by the way. They were like, you wouldn't kill your grandma, right? And then like grandpas across the country were like, what the fuck, dude? What? Anyway, let's go on to another one. Novelty. This falls under the category of psychological triggers. Novelty, which would be a sudden or dramatic event. Exploit your survival instincts. So let's say that would be like the bombing at, what was it, Ariana Grande's concert. That would be the movie theater. That'd be movie theater shootings, plural. Mass shootings. Sudden dramatic events. Now, I understand, you know, in the context of America, as far as we're concerned, it's not necessarily sudden, because that socializes it to make it seem as if it doesn't happen that often. It happens pretty often. But I will just say that is something. I mean, and then when you go to the conservative side of it, when you talk to Republicans, they do have decent numbers to say that, well, you know, these mass shootings, they don't really happen that often. But it does feel as if they do because of the previous points that we just went over. emotional triggers, repetitive images, etc., etc. I'm not necessarily saying that all these examples are untrue, but it is important to understand that they are trying to get you to feel and think a certain way about other people. That's how you avoid or you can spot a psyop from the get-go. All right, let's go to another one. Centralized narrative. Identical media talking points signal echo chambers. Let's go to Nick Sandman, who smiled at an Indian. And before Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter, you saw the narrative that he was a white supremacist, that his intent was to do harm to these Indians. And it was only until after the fact that they found out that these were a bunch of homophobic Native Americans that were harassing these kids that were wearing Trump hats. Nick Sandman won that lawsuit against CNN, mind you. So there you go. That would be, I think, a prime example of centralized narratives. Cognitive dissonance. You'll see a lot of this in Los Angeles, California. There's a lot of this going on in Los Angeles, California. Would just be cognitive dissonance. So here's what it reads. Create internal conflict by shaping identity through micro-agreements. So an example of this, reading again, ads linking patriotism with buying local. Yes, I agree. They import the parts, they build it here, they have you buy it. You're like, America! That's what you kind of do. That's you. That's how you guys sound. Cognitive dissonance. I mean, I wish I had like a more concrete example. I know a lot of women do this when you're in like an argument. Like, you care about me, right? Yeah. Well, why are you following me to work? That makes me feel uncomfortable. Well, I feel like you're cheating on me. Something like that. I wish I could just pull right now out of thin air like I have previously so perfectly an example of cognitive dissonance and how it relates to what we're talking about. But right now my mind's blank. I mean, a tip right here as it reads, reflect on whether minor commitments align with larger agendas. So, yes, this would be an example of that. An emotional script. Fear of scarcity, rejection, or survival instincts is exploited. Yeah, remember when we were fighting over toilet paper? Remember that? Remember when we were all in this together? And we clearly weren't. If you had money, it was fuck everybody, which I like. I can get behind that. There's nothing better than being rich, I would imagine. There's nothing better than being rich in the state of a crisis. Owning like a helicopter or a tank. Or some kind of armored vehicle during times like that. They really do this a lot. So for I mean I guess you can say that you're seeing a lot of this right now with the new administration passing executive orders preventing trans people from joining the army now. I'm sure there's going to be LGBTQ politicians that are going to push a level of urgency to get them to combat these laws. I mean it's already happening right now. You can already watch this happening. So, I mean, I guess that would be another example of that. Let's go to... This is my favorite one. Following the money. Charities funded by corporations lobbying for subsidies. So, you can... I mean, so let's use another example, right? Let's go back to the pandemic. You found out that the BLM, all the donations, was funneled to the Democratic Party. And I mean, it's like, well, yeah, it makes sense. It's a heavily Democratic thing to do, which is care about black people and police brutality. I totally get that. But when you follow the money, it's easy to paint this narrative that you're being duped. It's even more easy when you find out that the founders or the current CEOs of that movement were found, I don't know, what happened? They found them getting eaten out on a yacht or something like that. It was like one of the like lesbian CEOs or one of the, I don't know, I just know that they were like bisexual and they were like the head of the BLM movement and it was found that they were siphoning funds to pay for an Eyes Wide Shut party on a vineyard somewhere. You know it's true because it's not really talked about like that from, you know, liberal comedians. I hope that, you know, and you know, by the way, if what I said is false, I'm sure YouTube will fact check what I just said. Anyway, there's another thing too. Let's skip around here. Let's do a few more and then we're going to get out of here on this one. But I like this one, rapid compliance. Let's go. So this is like, I want to say Jordan Peterson's analogy about getting someone to move 1 inch further and further and further, as opposed to just telling them to walk 50 feet in that direction. If you start with the latter, at the end of it, the person's going to be like, well, how exactly did I go from here to there when up top I told you I was not going to walk 50 feet in that direction? And then the answer, as he said, I'm botching it, but he goes, the answer is that I just kept encroaching on you and you just kept moving little by little. And that's how I got you, you stupid motherfucker. That's kind of what happened there, is the rapid compliance. All they need is just a few of you, and that's where you hear people say, oh, they're sheep. That's where you hear that from. That's where that comes from, is you have enough people that are scared, that have seen the images repeated multiple times, that, as I've stated previously in the other segment regarding religion and authority, you want to just check out. Critically thinking for yourself is a very exhaustive practice. I would know because I do it on a day-to-day basis. So you have these groups of people that are vulnerable, that are maybe old, that have people that they care about, and they want this to be over. They want to go back to the bread and circus. They want to go back to blowing people they barely know in the bathroom at a Justin Bieber concert. They want to do this. And they want to pay for overpriced tickets to a Taylor Swift concert as well. They want to just go back to that. So what do? They keep moving back inch by inch by inch. And then you have what we have today. What do we have today? A fitting room in Walmart in Burbank that will never come back. That will never be reopened. Last one. Let's do the last one. Straw man. And but I love this too, because right here in the example on the Substack article is an example of COVID. So, a straw man, it misrepresents an argument for an easy attack. They oppose lockdowns, so they don't care about lives. It really just kind of goes to show you when they are even quoting their own PSYOP, which is amazing. I'm not saying that this person is responsible for COVID, but that just kind of goes to show you, yeah. You know, you voted for Trump, so you must not care about women. It's actually the opposite. I care so much about women, I needed to vote for Trump multiple times in a row. But that just kind of goes to show you, those are just a few examples of psychological operations and how to avoid them. By the way, I just started an email for the podcast. Please reach out. Please send me your stories. Please ask me questions. If there's anything about Gen Z that you want to figure out that you don't know, if there's any slang that we use, if there's something that we're doing, like car meetups and street takeovers, which we discussed on the Great Handshake podcast. Be on the lookout for that with Handren Seavey, brilliant comedian. We talk about that. If you have any questions about Gen Z that you want to figure out, that you're dying to learn about how we operate, you know, I might call it a segment, like called New Niggas or whatever the fuck, Young Niggas, New Generation, whatever the hell you want to call it. If you have any of that, pertaining to this podcast specifically, if you have another example of a PSYOP, and if you have a personal experience with psychological operations, I'd love to hear about it. Please reach out to the podcast. That would be thejspod@gmail.com. Make sure you send me an email there. So, yeah, I think that concludes this segment. I don't think there was a tangent that I went on. But, yeah, overall, that's how you avoid PSYOPs. That's what I do. And I've done this without any proper, official, organized type of training. I just do it. I'd like to think it's because I'm a stand-up comedian, and that's why I have the ability to do that so well. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Liberal, happy fun, la la la, human smuggling, fentanyl deaths, forced government euthanasia, la, chopping up children's genitals, la 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 la, la la la.
We're back. I wanted to talk about this obsession that people have with making movies, TV shows, and video games realistic. I was talking about this with my brother when we went to Vegas. We were talking about The Batman, the movie The Batman, starring Robert Pattinson and Zoe Kravitz. And I said, you know, listen, the movie itself, the story was fantastic. It was great. I was very invested in it. And I... it was great. The problem was I just did not like how it looked. I didn't like the filter of the movie. And I get it. Every genre has its grunge version. Every series, for the most part, has a rendition where it gets, like, really dark. You know, Mission Impossible, it's seen as, like, a kind of lighthearted fun for the whole family in a lot of ways. Spy franchise. There's, you know, there's shooting, there's killing, there's fighting. But then there's, but then there was Mission Impossible 3, where it got really dark. The James Bond franchise, right? If you go through each era, it's kind of heavy, but Timothy Dalton's run, especially with License to Kill, one of the greatest Bond movies ever, very, very dark. Just the, from start to finish, you just knew, it just gave you anxiety just watching it. Now, right, Batman, the versions that the public are familiar with, the versions you typically get are Batman that knows how to fight, the gadgets and the expensive cars. I wanted the playboy billionaire Bruce Wayne, and then action, like almost a Batfleck Batman. I did not like this, like, sweatpants wearing Batman. I just didn't like it. Wearing, like, long johns, but that were, like, kind of baggy. I get it. It's his first year. I don't mind, even in that respect, I don't mind it being his first year being Batman or second year being Batman. I just wanted it to look slightly cleaner and more high tech. And I also wanted slightly more, he was more angry in his fight scenes than he was calculated, cool and calm and doing kung fu and being a brutalist. There's just certain aspects of it where I'm like, that's not my Batman, but that does not negate the fact that the story itself was great. But then he goes, well, yeah, I mean, but that's like, it's more realistic. And I go, yeah, that's not always a good thing. That's why movies and TV shows suck now, is people are obsessed with making things look as realistic as possible. And this is why people say, you know, we're not great anymore. We used to be a country. It's because back then, if you look at the early 2000s and the 2010s, which as more time goes on and as older as I get, it is now the 80s for me, as far as I'm concerned. A part of what made those movies back then so good is because they were unrealistic. Watching Angelina Jolie shoot at bulletproof cars and then somehow they do like 50 flips in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Watching Bruce Willis drive a car into a toll booth and then it somehow launching the car into the air and taking out a helicopter. That's not very realistic, but it was still cool. And that was the whole point. Machine guns and those same types of action movies having unlimited ammo. Not realistic, but it was cool. I don't understand why we cater to nerds online that nitpick at everything. And then now we have these movies that are just hyper-realistic and it's not really, like, enjoyable now. Action movies now aren't really that enjoyable because we have bogged down our imagination to where, like, oh, well, that can't happen. It would never happen in real life, so we can't do it. It used to be a thing where, you know, I saw something in Live Free, Die Hard, which is one of my favorite action movies that I haven't seen in a while, but I just was like, let me just go rewatch this again. where like they crashed into a building and then you saw sparks from the light fixtures that were hanging. When's the last time you've seen that in a movie? So we just this obsession that we have in 2025 in this day and age with compared to back in the day with hyper-realism, I think is ruining the industry. I really do. I really do believe that. Yes, 20 years ago is now the 80s if you were in the early 2000s, 20 years ago before that. Fast and Furious is now My License to Drive. A Good Day to Die Hard is, I guess, now like my Rambo, or because I never saw that movie, but you get the idea. It's a new time, it's a new generation, it's new action movies, new things that we go after. But I just don't like this obsession that people have with the, this is more realistic. It's not. There used to be a time where if you walked out of the movies, you got kind of sad because you then had to go back to your regular boring life. I don't really have that magic anymore when I watch a new movie or a new TV show. I shouldn't think that I could do what I'm seeing in that movie. I should not walk away from your project being like, oh, I could do that. But that's how I felt after I saw the new Mr. and Mrs. Smith reboot with Donald Glover and whoever the Asian woman was. You know, they had chemistry, it was cool, but then, and that's not to say that it was not very well written. The show was very well written. The arguments that they had, the couple struggles that they went through, very relatable. People in the comment section said the same thing. Well, yeah, you know, I've had arguments like this before. And it's like, yeah, but that's not good. That's not good to me. It's just wrapped in the wrong present, I think. It's a spy show. Why aren't these people hot? I'm looking at these characters and I'm like, oh yeah, I see these guys walking down the street every single day. But that's like not what sold back then. And I don't think that that's a good marketing ploy now, is having people look, and that's another thing too, as far as like, well, hyper-realism, not everyone's hot. They should be. It should be unattainable. It should look impossible to do with the things that they're doing. This extends to video games too. Why does Mary Jane Watson look like the woman that bags my groceries at Ralph's? Why does she look like the woman that checks me in at the airport? That's what makes the thing sell. You know, Monterey Martinez, hilarious comedian, she had a joke. I'm not giving it away because she posted it on clips on Instagram Reels. But she was like, it's hilarious hearing women complain about attractive women in magazines. Where they're like, how am I supposed to compete with that? Like, girls typically don't look like that. Those looks are completely unattainable. And then Monterey goes, yeah, that's why she's on the cover. If everyone looked like you, there would be no value in it. I shouldn't think, oh, I could be a spy. I shouldn't think that. But when I see these new spy shows that come out where everyone's ugly, I'm like, maybe I could. I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at right now with it, where it's just like everyone just kind of in movies and in TV shows. There's only one other person that kind of agreed with me on this, and I felt so seen and validated, where I was like, everyone's ugly. She goes, yeah, everyone's kind of unattractive now in movies and TV shows. There's kind of, you look at movies and TV shows now, and you're like, dude, they're just kind of like casting anybody. Low key, I'm not saying this to be offensive. And that's another thing, too, that I want to talk about as far as, like, commenting on other people's looks. Whenever you say someone is unattractive or not much of a looker or ugly, people get offended on their behalf and they go, oh, you shouldn't say that. And it's like, dude, I've been judged for my physical appearance my entire life. Don't I have the authority on this? Because when you do that, the first thing people do is they go, well, I've seen the girls you've spoken to, or, well, let's look at you. I mean, you're 5'4". You're not a hot shot yourself. It's like, exactly. Exactly. You do that in your head when you meet me and you've hung out with me for X amount of time, but I'm the asshole for vocalizing it? Come on. Think about that for a second. Everyone does that in their head. They judge you, they categorize you, but they just don't vocalize it. I'm not making myself seem to be like I'll be the martyr. I'll do it if I have to do it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't like it how everyone gets on my case when I do the thing out loud that everyone does in their head. I had the same argument with my brother, you know, when I was talking about Lashana Lynch, who played the antagonist, technically, in The Day of the Jackal.
I was like, yeah, not the best looking woman, which is why I think people primarily did not like her character that much. It's because she just was not that attractive. And then first words out of his mouth, who do you think is attractive? It's like, exactly, motherfucker, exactly. You immediately went into comparison mode because you know that there's something, like when you comment on people's, you know, attractiveness, they go, let's look at you. It's like, yeah, you're clearly comparing. People who have been called ugly their whole lives, or at least half their lives in my experience, should get like the first say on what is and isn't attractive, because you're clearly telling me I am not something. Sex is what sells. It does not automatically mean that you want to sexualize someone, but just acknowledging that something aesthetically is pleasing and something aesthetically is not, it doesn't make you a pedophile. It doesn't make you a creep. It just makes you someone with eyes. Someone who does not mind living in objective reality. Someone who has received a certain type of tough love. That's where people are. That's why every time you go on Facebook, you see people arguing over why the woman that plays Ellie in The Last of Us TV show, I mean, looks like the moon emoji. I get it. It's like, yeah, dude, I mean, I don't think they're ever going to let this go. I get it. She is not the best looking girl. Yeah, again, just because you can acknowledge that she does not look anything like how the girl looks in the video game does not make you... That is not me. Well, I don't understand why your immediate reaction is to be like, well, why do you want to sleep with children? That doesn't make any sense. It's like, dude, come on, man. Have a better opinion, man. Jesus Christ. That's just where I'm at right now with all of that. So, that, I think, that's just where I'm at. Can we just please go back to seeing nothing but hot, jacked people in movies and in TV shows now, please? Back in the day, like, if you were ugly, you needed to be really good at something. You had to be really funny. You had to be able to sing. You had to play an instrument. Now they're just kind of like, no, yeah, sure, you're the man. I guess you're the leading man now. What? Huh? Stop. We've had enough. I've had enough. I've been told that Mel Gibson has been hired by Donald Trump to, quote, fix Hollywood. So that's, be on the lookout for that. Whatever the fuck that means. The Josh Shakespeare Podcast. Please follow me on Instagram. Follow me on TikTok at Josh A. Shakespeare. Send me emails. Email me. It's going to be in the show notes. It's going to be on the YouTube description. TheJSPod@gmail.com. Send me questions that you have for Gen Z. Send me topics you'd like me to go over. Send me espionage stories. We're going to go over more espionage stories, too, because I'm highly involved. I'm highly interested in this field. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. It took a lot for me to record this. I, like, killed myself to do this, by the way. I'm literally in a car right now on top of a parking lot structure in the Americana in Glendale. Just because I needed to meet deadline. My recording day was supposed to be yesterday, but I was just so swamped with... everything, with an audition, with et cetera, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. I'm sure I'm going to have more listeners on this podcast pretty soon when I start streaming. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Yep. Yeah. Bye-bye.